The ship moved while the island stood still. Ports were closed, beaches were scarred, hotel lights stayed dark long after the wind passed. Hurricane Melissa did not just tear roofs away. It stripped certainty from a region that sells escape for a living. Inside the cruise liner's conference rooms, tourism leaders gathered with charts, forecasts, and calm voices. Outside, the sea rolled on, indifferent. Jamaica, Bermuda, the Bahamas, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Dominica, and others carried the same problem in different weights. How to tell the world to come back when parts of home were still broken? This was not a celebration. It was triage. Every decision carried risk. Open too soon and trust breaks. Wait too long and economies bleed out. Jobs, debt, and survival sat behind every sentence. The meeting had a name and a schedule, but the pressure was older and deeper. The storm had already moved on. The damage had not. Chapter 1. After the storm, before the plan, Hurricane Melissa did not arrive as a surprise. It was tracked, named, warned about, and watched. Forecast cones widened and tightened. Alerts stacked up across screens. Still, when it hit, preparation did not blunt the damage. It only organized the chaos that followed. Across the Caribbean, the first losses were logistical. Airports shut down in sequence, seaports locked, cruise schedules collapsed into reroutes and cancellations, planes turned back midair, ships idled offshore waiting for clearance that did not come. Tourism did not slow, it stopped. For islands built on movement, stillness is danger. Hotels without guests do not just lose profit, they lose payroll. Restaurants close before they spoil. Tour guides wait without bookings. Taxi drivers park cars they still owe money on. Within hours of landfall, the damage moved from coastlines into balance sheets. Resorts took visible hits, roofs peeled, windows failed, pools filled with debris. But the deeper impact was quieter. Power grids flickered out unevenly. Internet access vanished in patches. Reservation systems went dark. Communication with overseas partners became intermittent. Confidence eroded faster than structures. Governments moved into assessment mode. Damage teams fanned out with clipboards and cameras. Emergency meetings filled ministry offices. Numbers came in broken and incomplete. What was clear was scale. Melissa had not crippled one destination. It had rattled the region. Tourism boards faced an immediate contradiction. Their mandate was reassurance. Their reality was uncertainty. Advisories from foreign governments shifted daily. Insurance adjusters arrived with schedules and limits. International media images froze the storm at its worst moment, then replayed it without context. The question was not whether the Caribbean would recover. It always had. The question was how long the pause would last and who could survive it. In the weeks after the storm, competition sharpened. Destinations less affected began reopening corridors and advertising readiness. Harder-hit islands hesitated, not from lack of will but from unfinished repairs. A fractured message formed. Some islands said, "Come now." Others asked for time. Travelers, confused, chose neither. Behind the scenes, frustration grew. Smaller territories worried about being erased by louder neighbors. Larger destinations worried about carrying the brand for the entire region. Cruise operators recalculated routes based on port readiness, not solidarity. Each decision was rational. Together, they strained cohesion. It became clear that isolated responses would cost more than coordinated delay. The storm had crossed borders without regard. Recovery, many argued, could not respect them either. The Caribbean Tourism Organization moved early. The second annual Caribbean weekend had already been scheduled before Melissa formed. Canceling it would have been easy and defensible. Instead, the decision went the other way. The meeting would proceed. The venue would change. Holding the gathering aboard a cruise liner was not convenience. It was necessity. Several islands could not host safely. Others could not guarantee access. At sea, power was stable. Communications were reliable. Security and logistics could be controlled. It was a floating neutral ground. There was symbolism, whether intended or not. Leaders would discuss grounded destinations while in motion. They would talk about rebuilding shores from a vessel built to leave them behind. As invitations went out, the tone shifted. This was no longer a showcase weekend. It was a working session. Attendees were told to come prepared with data, not slogans. The storm had removed the space for optimism without proof. Jamaica arrived carrying scale. Its tourism economy touched nearly every sector. Any prolonged slowdown would ripple through employment and foreign exchange. Bermuda arrived with a different problem. Its premium positioning meant expectations were higher and tolerance for disruption lower. The Bahamas brought a history of rapid reopening and the scars that followed. The U.S. Virgin Islands carried federal oversight alongside local pressure. Dominica came with lived memory of repeated storms and long rebuilds. Others followed, each with their own damage profile and political constraints. Some arrived with partially restored airports. Others were still dependent on limited entry points. All arrived aware that what they said and did next would shape months of headlines. Before the ship left port, side conversations began. Delegates compared notes in hallways and lounges. How bad is it really? How much is cosmetic? How much can we safely promise? No one wanted to be the weak link. No one wanted to be the dishonest one either. Outside, the sea was calm. The contrast was sharp. The storm that forced this meeting was already a memory on the water. On land, it was still active damage. The first formal session did not open with speeches. It opened with silence, a moment to acknowledge loss without itemizing it. Workers displaced, homes damaged, communities still without full service. Tourism was the agenda, but it was not the only cost. Data followed. Charts showed booking drops by week. Maps marked closed ports and reopened runways. Timelines were tentative. Every projection came with qualifiers. Weather had taught them humility. What emerged quickly was urgency without alignment. Everyone agreed confidence had to be restored. No one agreed on the threshold for truth. Was partial readiness enough if messaging was careful? Was full readiness even possible in a season defined by storms? The meeting had been framed as recovery. It was already becoming something else. A test of whether the Caribbean could speak with one voice when circumstances pulled it apart. By the time the ship cleared the harbor, the stakes were set. Delay meant lost revenue that would not return. Speed meant risk that could backfire. Somewhere between those pressures sat millions of livelihoods. The storm had passed, the reckoning had not. Chapter 2. Strategy underway at sea. The ship did not feel like a conference center. It felt like a controlled environment. Power stayed on, screens worked, schedules held. Outside variables were reduced to weather reports and port advisories. Inside, pressure concentrated. Delegations from Jamaica, Bermuda, Bahamas, the United States Virgin Islands, Dominica, and others boarded with binders and devices. Titles varied. Ministers, directors, advisors, all arrived with the same constraint. No one could afford a mistake that lingered online. The convening authority was the Caribbean Tourism Organization. Its role was not to dictate outcomes. It was to keep the room focused. The mandate was coordination under stress. Sessions were closed. Phones were limited. What was said inside was meant to shape what would be said outside later. The first agenda item cut directly to the problem. Messaging. Some islands were ready to reopen parts of their tourism product. Others were not. Some had airports cleared but roads damaged. Others had resorts intact but utilities unstable. A single regional message risked misrepresenting at least one destination. Fragmented messages risked eroding trust everywhere. Marketing teams argued for speed. The longer images of destruction dominated search results, the harder it would be to recover bookings. Every empty week bled revenue that could not be replaced in high season. They pushed for controlled optimism, careful language, reassurance without absolutes. Infrastructure voices pushed back. They warned that guests arriving too early would see the gaps. Delayed power, limited services, construction noise. One bad experience could undo months of advertising. Credibility, they said, was harder to rebuild than rooms. The debate stayed professional, but tense. No one accused another of irresponsibility. They did not need to. The implications were clear. Cruise industry representatives added another layer. Their concern was routing. Ships could move. Guests expected smooth itineraries. Ports that reopened without full readiness created bottlenecks that affected multiple destinations in a single voyage. Flexibility was their currency. Predictability was their demand. They pressed for shared benchmarks, not slogans, standards, clear indicators that a port was ready to receive volume. If those standards were not met, rerouting would continue. Not as punishment, but as logistics. Smaller islands listened carefully. Several raised the fear they had carried quietly since the storm, being left behind. Larger destinations could absorb short-term losses. smaller economies could not. If the regional brand moved forward without them, recovery would not be shared. That concern shifted the room. The discussion moved from speed to sequencing. Could reopening be staged without creating winners and losers? Could marketing acknowledge uneven readiness without signaling weakness? Data tables were pulled back up, arrival numbers by source market, cruise versus air, average spend, employment exposure. The storm had not hit all sectors equally. Beachfront properties took visible damage. Inland operations often stayed intact but depended on volume that was no longer coming. One proposal surfaced repeatedly, a shared recovery framework, not a launch date, a set of signals, power stability, medical readiness, airport throughput, port clearance, workforce availability. If a destination met the markers, it could speak publicly with confidence. If not, it would be supported quietly without pressure to perform. The idea was not embraced immediately. Some worried it created a hierarchy. Others worried it would slow those already ready. But it stayed on the table because the alternative was chaos. Another session turned to traveler confidence, insurance coverage, refund policies, rebooking guarantees. The storm had trained travelers to expect disruption. The question was whether the region could make flexibility a feature rather than a liability. Airlines and cruise lines had their own policies. Hotels varied widely. A fragmented approach, several argued, looked like disorganization. A coordinated stance could signal professionalism under strain. Late in the day, fatigue showed. Voices dropped, coffee replaced water. The pressure did not ease, it sharpened. Every hour at sea was an hour closer to public expectation. No formal votes were taken. That was intentional. The goal was alignment, not enforcement. Still, lines were being drawn. What the Caribbean would not do became clearer than what it would. It would not pretend the storm had not happened. It would not sell a fantasy contradicted by arrival. It would not sacrifice credibility for speed. Whether that restraint would cost more in the short term was an open question. The room accepted the risk without celebrating it. As the ship moved through open water, the irony lingered. Mobility made the conversation possible. Immobility made it necessary. By the time the final session closed, no one believed recovery was just a campaign. It was a negotiation with reality. The ship kept moving. The region waited. Chapter 3. What recovery really means. When the ship began its return leg, the tone shifted. The urgency was still there, but it was heavier now. The easy language of recovery had worn thin. What remained were consequences. Publicly, the gathering would be described as constructive. It was. But inside the room, the definition of revival had narrowed. No one was talking about bounce back anymore. That phrase had disappeared by the second day. What replaced it was durability. Tourism officials acknowledged something they rarely said out loud. The region was no longer rebuilding from an exception. It was adapting to a pattern. Hurricane Melissa was not framed as a once-in-a-decade disruption. It was discussed as part of a cycle that shortened every year. This changed the math. Reopening was no longer just about repairing damage. It was about whether repeated repair was sustainable at all. Infrastructure costs dominated the discussion. Not just the price of fixing what broke, but the cost of hardening what survived. Elevation, drainage, redundant power, backup communications. Each improvement added resilience. Each improvement also added debt. Finance ministries had their own limits. Insurance premiums were already climbing. Some properties were being reassessed altogether. The unspoken fear was that parts of the tourism product might become uninsurable. If that happened, recovery would stop being a choice. Another tension surfaced. Who benefits first when tourism returns? Workers needed jobs. Governments needed revenue. Businesses needed occupancy. But communities needed stability. Reopening too fast often meant workers commuting into damaged areas while their own neighborhoods remained unrepaired. That imbalance had caused resentment before. Melissa risked repeating it. Officials spoke carefully about this. The language stayed technical, but the reality was clear. Tourism recovery without community recovery created visible fractures. Visitors noticed, so did residents. Climate volatility entered the room without ceremony. No speeches, no slogans, just acceptance. Planning documents were rewritten in real time, seasonal assumptions adjusted, contingency windows expanded. The idea of a normal high season felt outdated. This acknowledgement did not come with solutions. It came with restraint, Leaders spoke less about guarantees and more about capacity, what could be handled, what could not. As the summit drew toward its close, attention turned outward. The statements that would follow, the press briefings, the careful phrasing that would carry this conversation beyond the ship. There was agreement on one thing. Overselling would be worse than silence. The region would not claim readiness it could not support. Messaging would emphasize progress, not completion. Honesty would be positioned as strength, even if it cost bookings in the short term. Whether markets would reward that honesty was unknown, but trust, once broken, had proven difficult to repair. The cruise liner itself became an unspoken metaphor. It was insulated, self-sufficient, able to move away from risk. The islands it served could not. They absorbed impact and waited. As delegates disembarked, there were no victory gestures, no declarations, just follow-up schedules and quiet exchanges. The work was not done. It was barely defined. Back on shore, rebuilding continued at uneven speeds. Some resorts reopened sections, some ports resumed limited calls. Others remained work sites. The storm faded from headlines, its effects did not. The summit would be cited as a turning point. That was partially true. It marked a shift in language and expectation. But revival was not a moment. It was a process measured in months and storms, not press cycles. The Caribbean had not solved its vulnerability. It had named it. In an industry built on escape, that honesty carried a cost. It also carried a chance. As the ship pulled away for its next itinerary, the islands remained, exposed, working, waiting for the next test.